Tuesday, February 25th, 2025. Councilman Longo, if you read our mission statement, please.
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Longo. City clerk, may I have a roll call, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Mr. Longo?
Here.
Ms. Ruby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson? Mr. Tungo?
Here.
Mr. Tubico?
Here. Councilman Nicholson is excused, working. Let's see. We do have a quorum. Please join me in the pledge of allegiance. Thank you. This time I want to recognize some visitors in the community this evening. First is Art Thatcher of Barry Dunn LLC. Please welcome.
Thank you.
Next is Dr. Angela Trujillo. She's a professor of nursing at the University of Alaska Anchorage with the assistance of a grant from State of Alaska Comprehensive Domestic Violence Council and the Alaska Nurses Association. Dr. Trujillo designed the Alaska Comprehensive Forensic Training Academy program to provide education and skills for a variety of interpersonal violence situations. She's here in Alaska to speak with strengthening healthcare responses for all victims of violence, children, teens, adults, and elders.
So thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have had the opportunity to come out, myself and my project manager, Joe Anita, and we've had the opportunity to meet with clinical staff and then also with community members this afternoon. And it was a great opportunity to share information about healthcare training to help healthcare providers recognize and respond to people who have been victimized by violence.
Thank you and welcome to Alaska. Next, I've got Joanne Uita, works with Dr. Trujillo as a project coordinator funded by Bureau of Justice Assistance. Grant is also funded to travel to Alaska that will increase awareness of need to support to provide equitable health care for all victims of violence.
Thank you, Mayor. We'd also like to say thank you to Lynn Crane with USAID for inviting us to the community. We really appreciate it. And we want to say thank you to the original people of this land. We appreciate the honor of having us come to your area. And in our Tsleil-Waututh language, I say Gunashchich, and I'll pass this around through the clerk for more information about our program.
Okay, thank you and welcome also to Alaska. Next, I've got Aaron Terry, FBI victim specialist and 20-year victim service provider in Alaska.
Good evening. This is my second visit to the island. It's been a pleasure to be here. We did some great training last night with law enforcement, EMT, victim advocates, mental health providers on trauma notification training, which just helps all of us be a little bit more prepared to provide death notification in a variety of scenarios. So it's been a really great visit. It's been wonderful to partner again with our friends at USAVE. I've been a long time coordinator of care with Lynn, and it's just an honor to be out here working with her again and her team. And we continue to look forward to ways that the FBI can support this community, and look forward to anytime you need us to give us a help. We're one phone call away and happy to get out here and support you. Thank you, guys.
Well, thank you also, and welcome to Alaska. Welcome all those here present. really cool house this evening. Move on in our agenda. We need a motion to adopt the agenda, please. And second.
Move to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman and second by Councilman Longo. Hearing no objections, the agenda is adopted. Next is the approval of minutes of previous meeting. We have a motion and second to approve the proposed minutes of the special meeting held February 6th and 12th of 2025. And the regular meeting held February 11th, 2025 as presented.
I move to approve minutes of previous meetings. Special meetings on February 6th and 12th, 2025, and regular meeting on February 11th, 2025.
Second.
Second.
Second by Councilman Luby. Moved by Councilman Temple. Hearing no objections, the proposed minutes are approved. Are there any objections? None approved. Next item is reports. First up is the December 2024 financial reports. I'll turn this over to the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Council, and everyone listening. I'd like to invite our interim finance director, Jim Sharp, to the podium, and he can give us a run through of our financials.
Good evening. It's great to be back. I recognize most everybody here from my time previously. I'm going to start off with saying thank you for having me back. It's always fun to come back and reacquaint myself with the folks in our department. They're great people. So I have a couple things I want to report on tonight. The first thing, you have in front of you some financial information through December. That's available to you because we've completed the fiscal year 2023 audit, which allows us to move forward in our accounting system and provide this information for you. So I'm going to pause. There's really nothing for me to highlight in the reports themselves. I'm still trying to reacquaint myself with what's going on. I've only been around for a month or so. But I do want to ask if folks have questions. I do have another small tip that I want to mention when we're all done here. So any questions, any comments from folks regarding the financial statements?
Councilman Coleman.
All right. I'm going to throw you in the fire here because something has jumped out at me and you might have some history behind it. So hopefully you'll be able to answer it. If not, hopefully the city manager will be able to. The tobacco tax revenue fund. So it strikes me as very odd that the revenue is projected budget at 700,000, but we've got expenses at 1.1 million, which is a deficit of $477,000. So I have been sitting here looking at a memo that was presented by our previous director, and this was back in March of 2024, and he talked about the clinic and how we were going to use funds from that particular, that special revenue fund to aid with the clinic. And in here, it talked specifically that the FY, and I know you don't have this memo in front of you, so this is not really cool of me, but I'm just saying, I don't understand what's going on here because it talks about the FY26, that there would be plenty of money in looking at FY26 moving forward. And so I'm wondering I don't understand why it's so low in the amount. I guess that's my question. It was, where were the money appropriated, out of which budget, for how long, kind of a thing, because I was really expecting this to be not so low, and that, yeah.
Well, thank you. What I can say with respect to the budget, clearly I wasn't here, but I did look, because Bill and I talked about this a little bit. When the budget was created for fiscal year 25, there were some funds that were appropriated that accumulated over the course of a couple of years, and those funds were made available
to fund some additional costs for the clinic, for some funds for the clinic. With respect to the current fiscal year and why the amount is so low, I'd have to go back and look to see. It's my understanding that it's typically, so the city receives their monies when the cigarettes are wholesaled, and that only happens a couple of times a year. I don't know where we're at in that process. My suspicion is we probably only received half. So I need to go back and look to see when we have received monies. And that, I can look certainly for this year, but I can also look for prior years. And that'll give me some sort of a feel for the frequency and the timing of those monies coming in. And we can certainly get that back to you.
Right. And thank you. And I just, and I, like I said, I just didn't mean to, you know, I know you're not familiar with this, but this is the memo back in March of 2020, in March 26th. And it talks about the FY budget having a certain revenue, and there would be potentially $763,000 available for FY26, and it doesn't look like that's going to anywhere close to it. So just, you know, I'm gonna ask that yes. So that's why this just kind of struck me as like, wow, we're really not anywhere close to having where it should be at this time. So I'm curious about sometimes how those funds are expedited or how monies are taken out, especially when you have, you're using, you know, the bed tax is another example of how I think we should be using exactly what's in there as opposed to through your averages or maybe even, you know, potential, what we expect to get out of there. So maybe it's just more of an accounting thing. It's just the way I look at it. It can be a little different. Thank you for the explanation.
I surely cannot speak for the decisions made in the fiscal year 25 budget process, but it is my understanding that those monies were made available from prior year earnings. If you look at what we've received so far, we're halfway through the year. So if you do double that, that gets us to 86% of the budget amount, which certainly isn't what you were expecting. We'll do some research and get back to you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions, comments?
One final thing, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead.
As I mentioned earlier, the fiscal year 23 audit has been completed, which means we get the pleasure of moving right into the fiscal year 24 audit. We did meet with the auditors yesterday via Zoom. The expectation is they will begin their audit in the next month or so. Our goal and hope is to have the report. The audit complete by the end of June. That's the goal, but we do anticipate that it may slip into July or August, but we're going to do the best that we can to get it done. But currently the plan is to have it completed by the end of June, but sometimes mm-hmm. these things slip a little bit and it could be July or August before we get it done, but we have already built up a plan. We're going to work from that and hopefully get it done.
Thank you. Matt?
Well, just add on to that, that I think I reported at a previous meeting that we were bringing on another person to actually help with that audit. So Jim is here to help as the interim finance director and keep us on track and help with the budgeting. But to get us out of the cycle of being late, we've doubled up and brought in a CPA to help us with getting the audits on track. So.
Okay, thank you. Jim, have any work?
That should be nice to get this done by the end of June, because we start our fiscal year on July 1st, right?
Yes.
So you'll appreciate it if you guys get it done there by June.
It's never fun to be behind.
I mean, we just got done with 2023, we're in 2025 right now.
Yes. So,
all right, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Councilman Ruby.
Yeah, I want to say thank you and welcome back. It's nice to see you back again. I always enjoyed all your presentations before, so I'm happy to have you back. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Thank you very much. Look forward to spending some more time with y'all. Okay, thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
We'll be talking to you. How long are you going to be here?
Weather permitting. I leave Saturday morning. The last time weather did not permit.
Okay, well, good luck.
Thank you.
See ya. All right. Next is the city manager's report, and I'll turn this over to the city manager.
Thank you. So I just draw your attention to, well, quite a bit of it, I think I'll just quick cover it. That we have received the craft disaster funding, 3.4 million plus, and we will be bringing some ideas and proposals to you about what we want to do with those funds in another meeting. The legislative visit that I attended along with the mayor, it was an interesting, that's the first one I've gone to in the winter, and a lot of the other city managers were there, and I did glean quite a bit. The two biggest items that they were talking about, obviously, budgeting wise, was the base student allocation for education, and then the amazingly enough, the PERS proposal. That's, I think it's House Bill 78, if I'm not mistaken. And that seems to be where a lot of their discussions and lobbying forces have convened. But it runs the gamut of, you have one senator saying it's doom and gloom, and another one saying it's just how we appropriate the money. So it could both be accurate, I'm not sure, but it was rather interesting. I also attended a meeting with the transportation secretary along with some of our union folk to talk about the gates at the around the airport, because that is a priority. So I'm grateful to them for inviting me, and Mr. Bell was part of that. CAPSIS, we've ended our projects in the CAPSIS. The deadline was yesterday. And community support applications, tell you we received 10, and they total about $2.293 million. And there's one that you see behind, attached to my report from the Q Tribe that came in late and is seeking eligibility as well as funding. And I think I mistakenly said that Trident would be on our agenda tonight. And I was speaking with Stephanie, I hadn't heard from her, Stephanie Moreland. It's our meeting on March 11th that they're going to be here, or at least attending via Teams to provide an update. And with that, that's all I have, unless you have a question.
Oh, thanks, Bill. Councilman Coleman?
Yeah, just my question is attention to the directive for the Electric Power Cooperative. It looks like its last update on here was September 27th, and I know we've had a presentation from Mr. Hernandez about future for electric power, and so I wasn't really addressed or focused in on that topic, though. So it'd be nice to have circle back and see where we've gone with this so far, where we look possibility to go with, and how would that would tie into power agreements or any kind of cooperative or plans for later on. So anyway, I know I'm putting my own spot here at this point, but it'd just be nice to see something come around to that to show that we're responding to the directive and that see if this works with for us or not.
I have updated myself with a discussion with Mr. Hernandez and told him he may, if you're interested, be able to give a 3 to 5 minute quick update on where we are with that and power agreements that he's working on, if you'd just like to have that at another time.
That would be great if you have something available to update us on the most recent developments. I'd appreciate it.
Mr. Hernandez.
Thank you.
Turn to the dais.
Good evening. Yeah, so since we received the directive, we held a few meetings with the co-generators on the island, and we discussed some of the options of what it looks like and what everyone's looking for in that model. We also took the opportunity to gather input on what we could do to explore that. There's quite a bit that goes into it. There's an operational side of it, whether it means having enterprise and actually buying and purchasing power from each other. And also kind of an administrative side. If you do form a cooperative all together, you'd have a board and other finances that go along with it. A couple of the suggestions that we did get were maybe having additional rates that would accommodate that or make it almost flow into it to explore it. maybe like a wholesale rate for those co-generators, possibly like a distribution or a line use fee. Say if you have a generator that has generation on one side of the island and would like to utilize that same generation across town, the city could have a small tolling fee for distributing that power for that generator. So we gathered that input and also incorporated that into our rate study and looking at what that would look like to have some of those commodities looking into the future. We've been working with our consultant for the last couple months and hoping to have some results maybe next month to present to the large power producers and get us more into it. So when we're ready to present those new rates or those possible changes to the council, it's a little bit more thorough and gone through. As far as the cooperative, we've also spoken to other cooperatives throughout the state, like Cordova, on just what it looks like and some of the benefits. Inventory is definitely one that's a plus, and also just the redundancy and efficiency of it. I think the main point of the cooperative was to kind of increase some of our capacity and efficiency and reliability. So the first step of having additional commodities in our own rate structure to be able to have power purchase agreements between all of us, I think, is the first step to continuing that discussion and kind of explore that model.
Okay, so with the other power producers, are you getting, you're developing kind of a cohesive message? I mean, do you feel like we're in a positive direction on this? Is it, worthy of continuing to explore?
I think so. We're at the point where we just took the input from everyone and we're trying to address what we can to move on to the next step. So obviously the first one was to have an exploratory, free co-op model where it's mostly based on our current condition. As far as how we operate, just like a business with an agreement to buy and sell power, depending on how that looks and works in the community, maybe move towards that co-op.
Okay, so that's your next step, is looking more power purchase agreements types.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Councilman Luby, a question for you. Very good.
Yeah, I had a question about the power. I was just kind of curious, is the city already connected to the other power producers? At one point, I thought like Alyeska was connected already. Is everybody already connected to the grid? Or is there some extra cost that would have to go into that too?
So Westford and Alyeska, our other larger producers, are connected. You can see there is an intertie, but it's not a full size connection for capacity on either side.
Okay, thanks. I was just curious where that was something we would have to look at putting money into the doing. So, okay, please.
Just like to remind the council that partly what we were waiting for is the study that we received from EPS to help us better understand our own system and what our resources are. So, that was ongoing too for several months.
Well, thanks, Councilman Tungle.
Do you have any kind of idea how much available out there in addition with the 30 kilowatt wise?
Probably about 40 megawatts is like installed capacity. I think overall together in the whole city, it's about 60 megawatts of actual assets installed, installed capacity.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Eric. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Any further questions for city manager? Comments? Okay. Then we'll move on. Next item is the annual reports from the Planning Commission and the Planning Board.
Looks like Dr. Virginia Hatfield is going to be in here pitching for both of the organizations. Am I correct?
Yes, good evening. Yeah.
So I did have a separate, but I can combine them if you'd like. So before you, good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. Before you is the Planning Commission and Planning Board 2024 annual report for your review. Highlights from this report include a variance for the Immaculate Fire Station and the zone amendment near McLeese Lake that better protects its subsistence and recreational value. You'll also see a review of the Planning Department activities, which include development of a new grant management program and hiring Jackie Adams as the Grants Management Coordinator, as well as negotiating important tideland leases that support business expansion while maintaining appropriate public access. The department also resolved a longstanding code enforcement case, resulting in a little over $207,000 settlement for the city. Looking ahead to 2025, we're preparing to update the comprehensive plan, which has reached the end of its lifespan. This update will be crucial for guiding future community investments. The department is also working to expand GIS capabilities and improve the permitting process. Cameron or I would be happy to answer any questions on the Planning Commission and Planning Board report. Yeah.
Have any questions for comments?
You can present on the Historic Preservation Board, which is the Commission's 2024 annual report, which is before you. The Commission reviewed several projects that are ongoing, including the Driftwood Bay remediation project, the U.S. Army Corps formerly used defense sites remediations, and discussion of the proposed airport upgrades. It also outlines our goals for 2025, which focus on improving public engagement, expanding the Unalaska Register of Historic Places, addressing goals listed in the 2011 Comprehensive Plan, and continuing to monitor ongoing projects. Again, we'd be happy to answer any questions about the historic report position.
Any questions regarding the Historic Preservation Commission? Good. Okay. Well, thank you for the report. Next item is the 8th community input and announcements. This time for members of the public to provide information to the council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium. Here's a microphone. State your name. 3 minutes.
Hi, Roger Likely, Parks and Recreation, PCR Director. First picture I'd like to show you tonight is we had a tremendously successful girl sign up. We had 120 young ladies and ladies there. And this is just the hallway between the pool and the gym. It was absolutely beautiful. And I just wanted to, you know, sometimes we have really programs that are outdoing themselves, and this is one of them. It's great. Next thing I'd like to tell you is about our youth swim league. The dates are March 3rd through April 12th. We need kids kindergarten to eighth grade. Getting signed up, folks. We're going to run out of, you know, run out of slots if you don't. Next thing is the 2025 polar bear run. Yeah, by the way, okay, that's fine. That'll be Saturday, March 8th, ages 9 to, you know, 100. Mountain run. Thank you, folks.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening. I have a few announcements for the Museum of the Aleutians. We have boat story time, 11:30 on March 1st. So we'll be reading some books to families and kids. On March 6th, we're going to have a program with KUCB that's going to talk about video archives. And this is something that KUCB has been helping us with, digitizing some of our videos. And so we're going to talk about that on March 6th from 6 to 8 p.m. March 12th and March 13th, we're going to have, this is during spring break, so we're going to have some programs where you can make a stuffed animal. So you purchase a kit and you can make the stuffed animal at the museum. It could be like walruses and bears and other cute items. And then I'm sorry, it's March 12th, 13th, and 14th from 2 to 4 p.m. So it costs $15 for a kit. And March 16th, we're going to have a drop-in art program. So you can come in and make some Zen designs, which are kind of geometric and interesting. And then March 27th, well, actually, this Thursday, we have trivia at 6:30 at the Norwegian Rat. And we're going to have it again on March 27th. So join us. We also have a split pot. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Emily Craig, USAID. USAID is collaborating with KUCB and APIA on a new radio show called Check Up from the Neck Up, where we'll be covering topics related to mental health and well-being, local and regional resources, and how to take better care of ourselves and each other. We recorded our first show earlier this month, and it is available on the KUCB website and Facebook page, and also on USAID's Facebook page. We talked about grief, self-care, New Year's resolutions, and available community resources. I encourage you to listen. If there are topics you'd like to see covered, please reach out to me or to Lauren at KUCB or to Delta at APIA. I'd really like to thank the staff at our sister nonprofit, KUCB, for providing a format to get our community talking about important issues. KUCB, you rock. But they rock. I'd also like to remind you again about the Unalaska Interagency Cooperative, which meets on the fourth Thursday of the month at 12 noon at the Unalaska Library. These gatherings are a nice way to touch base with what's going on in town, find opportunities for collaboration, identify emerging trends and needs in our community. Sometimes two or three people show up, and sometimes 20 people show up. The meetings usually last about 1 hour and are open to anyone. Our next interagency meeting is this Thursday, February 27th at noon. Finally, I'd like to remind you that USAID SUPOP fundraiser and membership meeting is coming up next month. Unfortunately, USAID's entire staff was ravaged one by one by the flu over the last few weeks, so we are running a little late on soliciting donations. So if you are a local business or artist and you have and you would like to support USAID in providing essential services to people in our community every day, please give us a call at 907-581-1500. We will hold the 2025 SUPOP on Saturday, March 29. We really hope to see everyone there. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor?
So, yes, go ahead.
We have Ms. Kim Hamish over in Zoom who wanted to make them a community input as well. Superintendent. Kim Hamish. Go ahead, Ms. Hamish.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, this is Kim Hanisch, Superintendent of Schools. I just wanted to make sure if you haven't heard already, we will be having home basketball games this weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday against Dillingham for girls and Soldotna JV for boys. And Parents' Night is going to be celebrated, our Senior Night, I should say, is going to be celebrated on Friday night. So hope to see everybody out there. Cheer on the Raiders.
Hey, thank you for letting us know.
I have one for the Unalaska Visitors Bureau. They have an artist spotlight with Cornell Robinson. So this will be on March 8, 2025 at the UVB office. And they also would like folks to save the date for their 19th annual wine tasting gala. This will be on Saturday, May 3rd, over at the Grand Ocean Hotel.
Okay, if there are any more announcements in chambers, anyone on the phone or Zoom?
No one else indicated, sir.
Thank you. Look like you're busy next couple of months. Mm-hmm. It's great. All right. Thank you. Next item is public comments on the agenda items. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. If they don't want to wait until the item comes up for regular agenda, to comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium. The podium, use the microphone, state your name. 3 minutes, please.
Hi, my name is Margot Peters. I have lived in Unalaska coming up on 29 years. I've had three children while living in Unalaska, not in Unalaska. But because of the prenatal care I received at IFHS, I was able to stay in Unalaska up to the last month of my pregnancies. So you can tell which item, agenda item I'm commenting on, IFHS presentation. Greg and I, my husband Greg and I, have three healthy children now, thanks in part to our clinic. Our clinic has gone through some ups and downs, and before I started working at IFHS 3 years ago, I was one of the community members who complained about the clinic. Then I saw behind the scenes our providers working long hours when they have overnight patient care, and then seeing appointments the next day, being short-staffed, aging equipment, etc. One of my main complaints as a community member was the high turnover of providers. After working there, I can see why, but these problems can be fixed with proper funding. The clinic is an essential service to our community. IFHS deals with everything from simple vaccinations to amputations, sick children to severe pneumonia, annual exams to cardiac patients, DOT physicals for our truck drivers who bring us our groceries, to screenings that alert patients to serious health problems before it's too late. Imagine you have the signs and symptoms of a heart attack, so you call 911 and our fire department comes and picks you up in the ambulance, but they have nowhere to take you because the clinic can't pay for the staff needed for after-hours visits. One of the main jobs of our city government is to keep its citizens safe and healthy, which includes emergency after-hours care. I hope our city council will listen to our CEO's presentation and not only decide to give IFHS the full amount for the after-hours emergency costs, but will also consider having the clinic as a line item in the city budget. So please listen carefully to her presentation and please support our clinic.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? State your name.
I'm Greg Walter, nurse practitioner at the clinic, IFHS clinic. And I will, thanks for what you said, Margo. I want to second everything she said, and just briefly want to thank the council for considering supporting the work that the clinic is doing. We're going to depend on you, and we're grateful that you're considering it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Let's speak on agenda items. Anyone on phone or Zoom?
No, sir. No one indicated they wanted to.
Next item is the public hearing. Members of the public may testify about any item set up for public hearing. There's a 3-minute limit per person. Please come to the podium and state your name. Public hearing is now open for ordinance 2025-02, authorizing the issuance of electric utility revenue refunding bond to the city of Unalaska, refund all or portion of the outstanding electric utility revenue refunding bond 2015A of the city, and authorizing the execution of certain documents in accordance there within. Does anyone wish to speak for the public hearing at this time? Anyone else? City clerk, are there written comments or anyone on the Zoom? Phone wish to speak?
No, sir.
Thank you. Hearing no further public comment, the public hearing is now closed. Next item is a work session. We have a motion and second to go into a work session, please.
I make a motion to go into a work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, second by Councilman Coleman. Is there any objection by council members? Hearing no objections, we are in the work session at 6:43. First item is the update from the Illinois Family and Health Services with the quarterly grant reports, October 24th. 2024 and January 2025. Don Johnson, the Johnson Interim Chief Executive Officer,
Good evening, Don Johnson, interim CEO for RFHS. I'll be giving you an update on what's going on with your clinic, as well as a little bit of a report for the community support grant. So a little bit of a background. We are a federally qualified health center, which is an FQHC. Basically, what an FQHC does is we serve medically underserved areas. We offer primary preventative health services. We serve all individuals regardless of ability to pay. We are required to offer a sliding fee scale for patients unable to pay, and we are also required to employ qualified and licensed healthcare professionals. As an FQHC, we cannot utilize that financial funding that we receive from HRSA for anything that is considered emergency care. We are only allowed to use that funding for primary care. We are also not allowed to charge more for after hours or emergency care than a regular clinic visit. So regardless of the type of care that we are providing after hours, any type of emergency care, emergency equipment that we're utilizing, we can't charge anything more than a clinic visit for that. We also cannot not pay our staff for those on-call after hours and overtime that they've occurred. A little bit of numbers for you for after hours for 2024. We had an estimated of 6,200 hours spent with patients after hours in our facility. Staff that are on call for the clinic, we have staff that are available 24/7. Obviously, there are times that we are open Monday through Friday and Saturday, but outside of that, we have people that are on call and ready 24/7, and at any given time, you're going to have a provider, a nurse staff, support person, a lab, and an x-ray technician. So minimum of 3 to 4 people at any given time that we are paying to be at the ready for call, and then once they come in, they're getting that overcall pay. Again, not able to charge for any of that, anything more than a clinic visit as an FQHC. So after hours emergency care last year, that number is 299. That's how many patients that we saw after our regular hours. That doesn't include walk-ins during the day we're open. This is just after hours emergency care, 299, approximately 25 a month. You see that number, if you think, okay, 299, 365 days a year, it's almost one a day. But what that doesn't reflect is what's actually happening. So these are patients, so last year, if we're talking about last year, the one that comes to mind the most is the patient that what they called in from a boat that said they're bringing us a patient, CPR was in progress. The EMS gets there to pick up that patient, and the crew members had stopped CPR, assuming that their crew member was dead. EMS, their regulations and their ability to catch a small faint pulse started CPR again, brought them to us. Our team continued CPR. LifeMed came in to pick up the patient. Our team was able to get what's considered ROS, which is return of spontaneous circulation. That patient's heart started beating again on its own, pumping blood to the rest of the body. LifeMed was able to get that patient to Anchorage right away. Luckily, the weather cooperated that day. And the next day, that patient woke up in ICU, alert-oriented times two, and was talking to his wife on the phone, a patient that was considered dead 24 hours prior. That's just one extreme example, but that is an example of one of those 299 patients that we saw last year. Just this year alone, I know you guys were made aware recently of one of our biggest success stories was the 95% amputation of a foot that our staff was able to reduce that extreme dislocation, hold that patient overnight because LifeMed was not able to fly, the weather was not conducive, hold that patient overnight, keep that blood flow to where by the time that patient got to Anchorage, over 24 hours later, surgery happened, they were able to keep their foot. Many, many issues or I say many issues, many cases like this. When you look at numbers, you see numbers on a page, you don't necessarily understand what that means and what goes into that. And when it's 299 patients, but that's many hours, hours and care that's given to each one of those patients that come to us. A lot of times we're able to keep them from being medevaced for the care that we've provided. Last year we medevaced 94 of those patients. This year we've seen a decrease in medevacs. We've had patients come to us from Accutan, a patient that came with severe pneumonia and sepsis. And if you don't know what sepsis is, it's infection in the bloodstream, and if not treated appropriately, can be fatal. This is a patient that needed to go to Anchorage, that would have been put into the ICU had they gotten to Anchorage, but we weren't able to fly because of the weather. And we had that patient well over 14 hours. And through the night, our team doing the correct IV treatment, the correct maneuvers and interventions that needed to be had, by the time that the next day came and that afternoon, that patient was able to be discharged into the community with a couple of follow-up appointments a few days later, and ultimately was able to be discharged back to Accutan and not have to go to Anchorage. Our small little clinic and the staff that we have were providing ICU care over 12, 14, 16 hours a night while the patient was recovering in our clinic, and we were able to keep them from being medevaced. They seem like extreme instances, but there's more like this than not. And I really would like you to understand what the numbers mean when you look at them. They mean your family member. They mean your friend, your neighbor, and could be you one day. And so that's what the after hours that we provide, that's what this will show you. A little bit more regarding the numbers. 2024 after hours. I'm not progressing. Just a little bit of the numbers that we have for you. After our staffing and equipment and supplies, the cost to us as a clinic, that staffing number, just under $1 million, that is after our staffing only. That is not salary for Monday through Friday, regular open hours. That is just after hours for 2024. Equipment supplies is just under $155,000, which gives you a total of just over $1.1 million. After our revenue, on the other hand, insurance monies that we received is just a little under $66,000. And from patients, just about $6,600. So as you can see, the deficit there is still a little over $1 million. We received just over $1 million from the city, or that's what was granted to us from the community support grant for this fiscal year. We are very grateful for that. That's allowing us to provide the after-hours care like I've just described to you. I've asked for in the last couple of weeks, the application that we submitted, what we're asking for fiscal year 26 is $800,000. We were looking ahead and able to decrease our amount that we've asked by about 25%. It still leaves us a deficit of $280,000. What we're trying to show is that we really appreciate the support that the city gives us. We are looking at ways to increase our sustainability financially and trying to do not ask for more than we absolutely need. And I say it still puts us at a deficit. So obviously we will take the extra $280,000 if you would like to grant that to us, but what we've asked is for $800,000. Part of what our requirements is to look at how we can become financially sustainable. I want to be clear that IFHS's and FQHC will never be completely financially sustainable. The sheer definition of us is that we provide care to the medically underserved, right? It's the people that can't pay. And so we'll never be completely financially sustainable, but that doesn't mean we can't aim and work toward becoming more sustainable as possible. Two avenues that we've been looking at that are potential for us would, if we were able to create or obtain a designation of a freestanding emergency department or a rural emergency hospital. Those two designations, if we were able to attain them, would allow us to charge emergency prices, a charge for the actual emergent care that we're providing. Either one of these, they're a long way away, even if they are attainable. I will tell you right now, the rural emergency hospital is not an option for us right now. We are keeping it open as a potential, but the history there is, during COVID, so many critical access hospitals were closing their doors because they could not continue to provide all the services that they typically would because of the situation. And a lot of critical access hospitals across the nation were closing their doors. The government at the time put in a rural emergency hospital as a way for a critical access hospital to step down into a lower designation and keep their doors open. So they could give up some of those services that they originally offered, step down, and still keep their doors open and provide services for their community. There was, at the time, there and now, there is no way, no avenue for a clinic like ours to step up into a higher level of a rural emergency hospital. Now, last year, there was a bill in front of Congress that had that avenue in there that said a clinic could potentially step up into a rural emergency hospital. As of recently, IFHS has been in communication with Senator Murkowski's team, and we were informed that that bill, with the changeover of new administration, that bill is no longer on the floor of Congress, so they will have to resubmit that. And they are considering whether they're going to resubmit that or not. So we don't know if that's going to go in front of Congress or not. We're leaving it as an option in case they do. The freestanding emergency department is a different animal all of its own, but we're making progress and steps toward potentially going for that designation. So as many of you know, about eight months ago, we, IFHS, went through a leadership transition. And with that, we've started looking at and trying to identify things that need improvement, things that we can make better movement towards sustainability. One of those things that was glaring to us was our billing practices. I don't think it's going to be news to anyone in the room that IFHS and their billing practices are not necessarily popular in the community, because we have, in the past, we've had patients receiving bills for bills that they've already paid, bills that for services that they received, you know, a year or 2 years earlier, and bills not going out in appropriate amount of time. All of this pointed to the practice in the past was just one individual that was designated to do all of those things, billing, coding, and patient postings, all of the things that have to do with billing. And it just wasn't sustainable. We were not keeping up and we were behind. Our AR was not where it needed to be. So we've been able to contract with Aurora Billing, Coding, and Consulting out of Chubiak. This is a team that has come in. They came in late October and got to work, and they've really done a lot of work getting us more current on our billing practices, because once you reach a certain amount of time, you can't bill any longer. You can't send out statements any longer because it's overdue and or over the extended end of life. And so Aurora has come in and gotten us up to actually we are current, and they are also able to have the staff and have the time to talk to people who have concerns, who have questions and complaints about their bill, or just don't quite understand why their bill is the way it is. In the past, we only had the one individual, and she just did not have the time or the bandwidth at the end of her day to have those conversations. And so we're slowly turning around our billing practice and hopefully changing our reputation for our billing in the community a little at a time. But that's one way that we are looking to become more financially sustainable, because we're seeing as we get things out in time, then we're getting reimbursed in time. And so it will take time to start really seeing the fruits of our labor, but we're already starting to see an improvement, and we're happy there. This is our site plan that was approved by our board of directors in the last meeting. This is part of what we believe is going to help us become more financially sustainable. So as you already know, the IFHS was awarded a $20 million grant for renovation and expansion. And so with that, we have started, we've gone through all of the schematic design with our architects. And this is the site plan that has been approved that we are moving forward with. If you look at the top left green building there, that is our current building. Coming out from that pink, light pink area, that is going to be all of the new expansion. So we will be renovating our current building. We will be expanding out toward the city there. And everything that we're going to be expanding, all of the new build, is going to be our clinic. So it's going to be our clinical department. So we're going to be building a new emergency department, a new lab, new radiology, and a new pharmacy/dispensary. Those departments will be built to hospital grade standard. Why that is important is because on the previous slide, we talked about a freestanding emergency department. A freestanding emergency department, anything that goes with that emergency department, it must be built to hospital grade standard to even be eligible to ask for a certificate of need and to try to obtain that designation. And so by building the way that we're going to build, it will put us one step closer to potentially getting that freestanding emergency department designation. And with that, we would be allowed and able to charge appropriately for all of the after hours care that we're providing now, but not getting reimbursed for. The IFHS CEO recruitment. So as you know, with the leadership transition 8 months ago, the board of directors asked that I step in as the interim CEO. And recently the board of directors has offered me the position for permanent, and I have accepted. We are in the middle of just discussing what those terms will look like and hoping to have that be a permanent decision within the next week or two. Also in leadership is our clinical leadership. I want to let you know what's going on there. So recently we were able to contract with Dr. Jim O'Leary to be our medical director. Some of you may know him. He's been to Unalaska many times as a locum, and so he knows the team and he knows quite a few of our patients. He's going to be our new medical director. He's going to work primarily remotely, doing a lot of the administrative duties that we're required to have a medical director do. He will also be on site regularly, so he'll come out quarterly and you'll see him in and around town. And he's also available 24/7 for consultation for our providers or our nursing staff. On site, we have Christy Fassbender, who is one of our nurse practitioners, who has been our interim medical director for quite some time. So she is agreed to stay on and partly in that role as an on-site clinical admin support. So she's going to be that on-site contact for Dr. Valeri. She's going to continue to do a lot of the administrative duties that she's doing, helping put some protocols in place and practices, a lot more care toward emergency because that is her background. And then she also provides regular patient care for our patients. That pretty much concludes my presentation. I just again want to thank the city for the current support that we received from the community support grant. Look forward to receiving more funding in the future to be able to continue all of the emergency after hours care that we're giving now. So if anyone has any questions, I'm here to answer.
Yes, thank you for that update. Is there anyone, council members, have any questions, comments, concerns? Councilman Coleman.
Thank you. First of all, I like all your profile pictures. It's the power pose that you're doing there. That's good.
I'm going to thank Teresa Novakovich for that.
It's a thing.
Yeah, she is on our staff. She is our grants management director and human resources director, and she is extraordinary with a camera. So she's good at portraits, and so that's part of her job. And she does great.
So you definitely have identified the items once again that we've always heard from you and numerous directors before you. The billing, I'm thinking for, addressing that. You have to, it's trust with your clinic and being available to that and knowing that you're going to get timely bills. I think the other thing, obviously, is emergency care. Once again, I understand the billing that you guys, we are choosing to provide medical services where we don't have to. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other option is to not. I mean, as a healthcare provider, you can't. It's always for me with the clinic. It's progress, not necessarily perfection. As long as we are continuing to move in the direction that will meet these goals, that's really key to seeing that. What are we doing? What steps have we taken? And not just lip service. Exactly. So, and in the last few years, I haven't seen that. I've seen some very strong movement that these are our problems. So this is where we want to get there. And there's just growing pains with all that. So, thank you for the presentation. Appreciate it.
Welcome.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Coleman. Who else? Councilman Bell.
I'll just make a few comments here and appreciate the presentation and the information that was provided. But I do the comment that we're fixing the billing or going to a different company. Will create some efficiencies. From my perspective, the proof's going to be in the pudding. Seeing the financials and how that all works out. The last three directors that I can remember have all come in and said the same thing, that hey, we need to change our billing company because we're having problems with billing or we're not collecting what we should be. So that's been the same mantra through multiple directors. I understand the importance of the clinic and it does provide a vital function in this community. But we also need to be, as a council and as a community, we need to know that the monies that we're allocating or granting to these organizations are going to be used well and properly. I look forward to more information and I think as we get into the grant process here, is taking a good look at the financials and seeing kind of getting an idea of the health of the clinic, you know, from stuff that's on paper, that's something we can physically see. So, thank you.
Excellent.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Any further questions or comments? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, so I've had the privilege of joining the board of the clinic and to see firsthand what we've been working towards and what everybody has been working towards. And as far as the billing goes, I have met people from Aurora Billing, and I was pretty impressed with, you know, the work that they are doing. I've seen it in the financial reports as well. The receivables are coming down, and they are, you know, really trying to work with the community, and they're taking, you know, calls, concerns of community members. And if anybody does have, you know, any issues at all with their billing and they're receiving bills, it's like, what's this for? I already paid this. Please give her a call, because they are absolutely trying to answer questions and look into stuff. This company, she came out here for 10 days and worked with the staff to try to help facilitate things, you know, in the clinic as well to help them. They have dedicated people that are just working right now towards the current billing, so that they don't fall behind on what's happening right now, as well as other staff that are working on the back billing and trying to collect stuff. And it has been an issue with for a while. And after a year, you cannot collect from insurance companies. And if you don't have enough staff to answer insurance companies' questions about coding, there's, you know, a number of things. Same with workman's comp. If the clinic staff cannot get back to them, they're never going to collect that billing. So I believe Aurora billing has been an asset to the clinic. So far, I've met with them. I've listened to them for 3 months on every single budget committee meeting. And it's been, I've been impressed with them. So I'm really hoping, but I do agree, proof's in the pudding. This has been an ongoing issue for, I think, since the day that clinic opened. So hopefully we found the right people to do it. And I know we've built it, sourced it out before, and it hasn't, you know, gone very well either. So anyway, thank you for the presentation. I really appreciate it. And I just kind of want the community members to also know that, you know, please give Aurora Billing a call. You know, if you have any questions about your billing and stuff. So, and they are working really hard to turn this around. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Ruby. Anyone else? Councilman Togo.
Well, thank you, and appreciate the presentation. Yeah, billing has always been a big issue in the clinic, from the start, from the get-go. And every director that, Council Member Bell said, every director has always been changing and hoping for the best, because a few times there are some billings that the problem when you already pay your bill and you get that, they send you to a collection agency. That it's not a good it's not a good thing that happened that clinic a few times before. But expansion on the building, boy, I can't wait to see that. That's really you know, with the money that you guys got in there, that hopefully we will become an hospital, rural hospital, once we started expanding on that building. And billing will be a big difference once we become an emergency hospital. Because I guess you guys cannot really bill like the right price for the service that you provide to them. So, can't wait to see that expansion goes, and it looks good. Thank you for your presentation, and thank you for doing great at the clinic.
Thank you, Councilman Tango. And further comments, questions?
Just final comments. Thank you for the excitement about the building. We too are excited. Just today, I received a couple of 3D drawings of potentials from the architects. They sent out three options of what it may look like, and it's you know, thus far we've been just looking at kind of what I showed you from above of where departments will be and that kind of thing, but seeing what the building might actually look like, it really induces excitement. And so once we decide on which plan that we're going to go with and it's been approved, I can bring that and share that with the city as well. I also want to recognize all of your comments about the billing, and I'm not surprised by those comments because I've heard them for the last 2 years that I've worked with IFHS. And yes, this has been a long-term problem. I am not claiming to be the answer to all of your problems and all the billing problems, but I am committed to seeing this through and making as much of an improvement with that billing process as possible. And so we need your help to do that. If there are things not going right, we need you and the community to let us know, because we want to be sure we're on the right track. But we are committed to turning it around and making it better, recognizing that it's been a problem for a very long time and that several directors have said the same thing, and several directors, that tells me that it's been a long-term problem. Therefore, it's not going to be fixed overnight. It is going to take time, and we ask for your patience, but we also ask for your participation and help us. If there are things that you're seeing that we need to correct, we need to know about them, because we're committed to making those improvements. We're committed to turning our reputation around in this community to be positive, because that's why we're here. We exist for you, to make your life better, to help relieve the pain and suffering that you may be having, or to actually save your life one day. That's why we're here.
Yes, thank you. I guess my question is, maybe I really don't understand this, but how much participation do you get from the companies here in this town in funding or grants, or other than they pay the bills for the workers, and are they on time, or what's the ratio of that compared to the community?
As far as funding, we have our PRSA funding for our primary care only, and then we have our funding that we receive from the city that helps us provide the after hours care. As far as our partnerships with our industry in town, yes, they pay the bills for their patients and they pay them on time. But not everything that comes to us, even if it's employees of theirs, it's not necessarily related to work. It may be a different issue that we're treating. And if it doesn't pertain to work and it's not actually related to work, then they're not obligated to pay for that. And so, yes, they pay on time when they send us patients that it is work-related, but not always. And so we're treating patients that we know alone can't pay, or that they don't have insurance. And we're offering them all of the options, right? The sliding fee scale, and we're offering them the ACA if it's within the enrollment period for Affordable Care Act. And we're doing all of those things to help. We have case management that helps people sign up for Medicaid if necessary. So we're offering people the options of how to be more covered with insurance. But until then, or even that, Medicare and Medicaid, you know, anything about government, that, you know, they don't really pay you 100% either. But it's a designated amount that you're going to get. And so these are just challenges that we're up against. And again, I'm not the first director to identify it. I'm just another director that's going to try and hit it with everything that I've got. And I have a good team behind me that supports me, and I have a good board that supports me, that together, I think if we attack it together, we can find solutions. But again, it's not going to happen overnight.
Okay, thank you. I think that was one question. No questions for the comments? Thank you for your great report, and I think we all understand where we're at in the clinic. It's all important to this community, and we'll review our standing in the community grant program and see where we're at.
Thank you.
Appreciate your
information. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Bill?
No.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll move on to if anyone present wish to speak on this on the planning work session, go. Yeah, clerk, is there anyone on the phone or Zoom?
No, sir. Earlier we had a hand raised, but not anymore.
Thank you. We'll move on to the next one. Is the PCR master plan presentation? Turn this over to Park Doctor from Barry Thomas here, and also turn this over to City Manager.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to bring up Roger, who's going to introduce Art Thatcher, the consulting firm that prepared our plan. They worked really hard on this, and we're excited to have it presented to the public.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Mayor and Council. We have the Parks and Recreation Comprehensive Master Plan coming forward before you tonight. Art Thatcher will be giving and walking you through the plan. One of the things that we have done to help the community, because this was such a community response to the plan, is that we've put out flyers around the community with a QR code on them. And you can hit that QR code and it takes right to the plan. You can also find the plan on the website, the city website. You can find it on the Parks and Recreation portion of the website. You can download it, you can get it printed out, wherever you want, you can get it. I'd like to talk a little bit now about Art. Art Thatcher is a manager with Barry Dunn and is a certified park and recreation professional with 42 years of experience in public, parks and recreation operations, programming administration, volunteer board leadership, facility design and operations, and community engagement. In the 11 years consulting with Barry Dunn and Greenplay, Art has worked with over 125 communities across the country, compiling master plans, needs assessment, economic impact studies, outdoor recreation assessments, sustainability studies, and organizational assessments. He's become known as a national expert in working with communities and presenting topics related to public engagement, economic benefits of the park and recreation, and outdoor adventure recreation program. And he has trends in the industries and organizational health and wellness. Art Thatcher is a great professional, good friend, and I'm happy that he's going to present the plan to us tonight. With that, turn over to Art.
Thank you, Roger. Mr. Mayor, members of council, city manager, thank you for the opportunity to come and present the master plan to you. I will jump right into this. So we've been working with the city for a year now. It's been a great experience and a great partnership. These are the five phases of the project that we've gone through over the past year, starting with the discovery phase, looking at existing documents, looking at your demographics and trends analysis, and kind of doing that discovery piece. The largest part of it was our engagement. We were here, and I'll go into that in a little bit more detail. We did a mixed method approach to our engagement, both in person as well as virtual and through the mail. Once we gathered all of that data and the discovery, we began our analysis and pulled all that together in what we call our key findings matrix. Reviewed that with the staff, did a visioning session, and began to develop goals and objectives and action steps. And so we're here in this final stage of the master planning process. And so as we kind of look at a quick overview of some of that, some of the background that we looked at. So we looked at your population trends, and we used several different resources for looking at your population. One and what we have here came from the State of Alaska's Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And it looks at the Western Aleutians. And so you are about 80% of the population of the Western Aleutians. And so some of your numbers may be a little higher than what you typically have just looking at Unalaska as itself. It was just one of the state figures that we used. We also used ArcGIS as well as Esri Business, which look at you individually. And so you can see there's in 2023, the Western Aleutians were at about 4,067. You see a little bit of growth into 2024, and then again a little bit of a fall off over the next 5 years. So as we looked at at ArcGIS and some of the more broken down demographics, ArcGIS gives us an opportunity to look at age segmentation. And so you can see on the right hand side, or the left hand side, I'm sorry, as you look at the different population groups, you can see that your age group of 35 to 54 is your largest population, and kind of evenly distributed on either side of that. On the right hand side looks at growth over the next 5 years, and you can see that your youth population is designated to kind of drop off by about 5% over the next 5 years, as well as your adult population at 55 to 74. Your older adults are going to kind of remain the same, with your seniors and your young adults gaining some population again, about 5%. So looking at that area. So as we use those to kind of look at your programming as well as your opportunities for recreational spaces. So this is from Esri, and it looks at your demographics. And so you can see the population in your demographic breakdown in 2010 to 2023. You had your white population dropped by about 8%, while you also had a decline in your Black and your African American, and then an increase in your Asian population, an increase in your Pacific Islanders, and really kind of an increase in all of the other areas, and with that other growing by about 7%. So we also look at national trends. We use several data points here. This is from the sports and fitness industry, and this is looking at national trends in athletics. And so you can see that if it goes from the 2018 to 2023, you can see that there's been growth in fitness sports, outdoor sports, as well as your team sports, your racket sports, and your water activities. The only really decline has been in individual sports. We also, within the plan, look at the state of Alaska as well as Unalaska in many of those categories as well. So, as I mentioned, public engagement was a major part of this. We used a mixed method approach to that public engagement. So, one of the things that we did was in-person focus groups and stakeholder interviews. We talked with 70 community members as we went through this. As we look at those that participated, both members of the library as well as the PCR advisory boards, we talked to educators, public safety, we went to the senior center and spoke with the seniors. We talked to the teen council, as well as we went to the high school and talked with students at the high school. We did interviews with city leadership, community members, and then we did a SWOT analysis with the PCR staff. So then kind of continuing in that engagement, we did intercepts at a couple of events. We were at the Spring Festival, and we talked with 134 individuals at the Spring Festival. We were also at the open house, and we talked to another 75 community members during that time. We also visited the high school, went to the senior center. We also attended one of the swim meets while we were here and had an opportunity to talk to some of the swimmers as well as to some of the community members. So some of the strengths that we heard from those in-person interactions were your special events. are a great strength in the community. The library, the building, and the usage are a great strength. The longevity of your events, they've been around for a long time. The community really looks forward to those. The community center, it's very well used. The design is well designed so that the community can use it for multiple activities. You can see this was one of the events that was held in the gymnasium that typically wouldn't be held because of the sports and those things. So it's that versatile space. And then the aquatic center and your swim lessons are a great strength to the community, the ability to use the pool. So I asked about what are some of those challenges, and resources and staff availability was one of the challenges that we heard. So that the availability of resources, supplies, and those things, as well as the availability of staff to work and to maintain the building. Logistics of being of providing services in a remote location. Just not, you know, a lot of times your materials and those things are hard to come by. Future health of the fishing industry. The fishing industry is the major economic driver here. So as the health of the industry goes, so does the your participation and the health of the department and the city. Capacity of the community members for leisure time. Many of them work, many of your community members work long hours, work long shifts. And so finding that balance of when you can offer leisure at time activities for those members of the community, and then your weather patterns impact your outdoor participation. Today was a good example of that. It was, you know, beautiful and sunny. Well, it was snowing this morning, then it became beautiful and sunny, and then it snowed again, beautiful and sunny, and then it started snowing again as we were coming here. So it really does have an impact on your outdoor activities, as well as just the, you know, the moisture that's in the soil and in the tundra that you know, that you have to deal with. So we, part of what we looked at, you know, through those intercepts and those things, were looking at what were some of the community priorities for the department. And I'm not going to read this whole list. It is in a priority order from the dots that we got, as well as the intercepts that we got. So improving your playgrounds was the number one priority, followed by updating your aquatic center, the need for a new indoor multipurpose facility to help increase growth in your activities, and then you're looking at the possibility of like community greenhouses and covered activity spaces were those kind of top five or six. So then we did a statistically valid survey. We worked with a research company, ETC, and they mailed a survey to every household in the community, and also provided an opportunity to fill out that survey online with a link and a passcode. And so we got 101 residents that completed the survey, 101 households that completed the survey. 44% of them have lived in Little Alaska 20 years or more, 34% 10 years or less. So we got a good mix of longtime residents as well as new residents filling out the survey. 93% were permanent residents, 7% were seasonal residents. We tried very hard to work with the fishing industry to see if we could increase that number, but we only got to the 7%. 99% of the respondents own cars, and 36% own dogs. So we asked about what were the most used parks and facilities, and gave three choices. What were your top three? And so you can see that the community center was the number one by a great margin, followed by the aquatic center, and then the library. And it's interesting that your indoor facilities were your top three. A lot of that is weather driven and just the opportunity to get inside, and then followed by three parks. So Town Park, Sika Spruce, and then Community Park were your, you know, those kind of top six, your top three indoor facilities, and then your top three parks. So we asked about the overall quality of the parks and facilities that they were using. And you can see the library jumps to number one, which is not surprising. It's a brand new building, brand new facility. And so you can see 78% said it was in excellent condition, followed by Sika Spruce, which is also relatively new and has had some upgrades to it. And then the PCR, and then the and Town Park. So as you're kind of those top five. So we asked about the overall quality of recreation programs. We look at programs as well as facilities. And you can see that your runs and your races were number one, and followed by the father-daughter dance, and then the children's theater, and then the Heart of the Aleutians Festival, being those top four. And you can see that in that top five, four of those five are special events. And so special events are very, very important to the community, and that we heard earlier. And so, as I said, we did a team survey. We were able to do a survey with the teens at the school. And so we had 106 teens that completed the survey, more teens than we had households complete the survey. And you can see the participation numbers. One of the things that we did find out is that when the survey went to the schools, it was the last week of school. And so most of the seniors had taken their exams and they were not in the school, which is why we got such a low participation from those 12th graders. But we had a great turnout from the teams. We asked them their preferences for activities that currently are not being offered. And so football was number one, followed by baseball, climbing, bouldering, martial arts, self-defense, and wrestling, kind of being those top five. I know the department has recently reintroduced baseball into the program schedule, but it doesn't go into that 9th through 12th grade age group, which is why you see that as the number two. So then we also worked with a landscape design firm, Bettisworth East, and they're out of Anchorage. And so they came and did an inventory of all of your parks. They walked all the parks. They looked at all the components and gave that, looked at the quantity of those, as well as did a quality score for those. And so we finished a map of all of your facilities. You can see they're very well distributed within the community, mostly in that spine. And so so what we did was we pulled together an atlas. They did an atlas. We did an aerial of each one of the parks, designated the GIS boundaries for each of the parks, and then GIS each one of the components within those parks. And then we completed this scorecard with them. So you can see that we put the address down, the acreage of the park, what classification of the park was. And then we did kind of in that center an overall kind of overview of our findings of the park. And then we kind of went through the kind of the grading scale. And you can see that first group looks at the quantity within, and then those components with their quality score. And the scores are a one is it's below expectation. So it's not functioning the way that it was designed to function. So it may need to be replaced or upgraded. A two is it's meeting, so it may just need some regular TLC. And three is that it's exceeding. So it may be a new piece of equipment that you put in, a new picnic shelter or something along those lines as you look at those. And so we put a full atlas together and provided it to the department for each park with the GIS map and then the scorecard. And so then for the project, we pulled all of this together. You see, we pulled the parks together, grouped them by classification, and then the number of components that are in each park. Because a lot of communities, they do their level of service based on acres per 1,000 residents. And we know from our experience that two 5-acre parks may be vastly different You know, if one is just an open green space and maybe has a picnic shelter on it, versus one that has an open green space, the picnic shelter has a walking path around it and a playground. You know, they're completely different. And they just offer more opportunities for the community to recreate. And then your total acreage, the acreage of each one of the parks and your total acreage, 26.1 acres for all of your parks. And so this is then we provided each park and each one of the components that were in those parks so that you could see that the number of basketball courts you have in the community, the number of practice courts, which are half courts within each. I'm not going to go through each one of those, but it provides the department with an inventory of each of the components that they're taking care of. And so then we looked at kind of walkability. And so this is the walkability to two or more components within a 10-minute walk of a residence. And so you can see that dark blue, dark purple, sorry, I'm colorblind, so I kind of, you know, are given a guess at what that is. And so that kind of dark blue, purple, it is residents that have walkability within a 10-minute walk to at least two recreational components. And then we expanded that to a 1 mile access, since 96%, 99% of the population has a car. And so some are willing to drive, and you can see that coverage really is expanded to, the darker shades shows a high level, and that's up to four components, a minimum of four components within that 1 mile access. So you've got, the community has good access to recreation components. And so we gather all that data, we begin to look at it, and we look for where we've reached what we call saturation. So when we begin to hear and see the same things over in each one of the different data points, we know that we're kind of reaching that saturation. And so some of the recurring themes that we heard through that is, the community center and the library are heavily used and they're very desired by the community. Again, the aquatic center is also heavily used. However, it's really reached its end of life. The weather limits your outdoor sports activities. The community priority is for an indoor multipurpose recreation facility to increase their opportunities for recreation. Playgrounds at the elementary school have also reached their end of life. Recreation programs have really reached their capacity based on facility size and staffing. The cost for the lease of the church property is extremely high for the number of times that the department uses it each year, which is less than 10. And so, it's something to kind of consider, as you're kind of thinking about the lease expiration and whether to renew it or not. There's an opportunity to convert your natural grass playing fields to synthetic, which will increase your playtime, which will, help you mitigate the weather issues that you have with your playing fields. And then the high school, that track, walking loop that's currently graveled, really needs to be paved. And that central kind of field area, if you turf that, again, would be able to use that both for high school activities as well as for the community. And so from there, we've finished our visioning session. So we developed six goals for the plan, and then developed strategies for each of those. And then we developed action steps to address those strategies. And so the first goal is to deliver a high quality recreation facility. In an indoor facility to support your recreation needs. That second is to provide a high quality aquatics facility to support your recreation and safety needs. The third is to deliver recreation programs that continue to build on your community and those focal points within the community. The fourth is to maintain and preserve and enhance your parks and your park experiences. And then the fifth is to deliver parks and recreation services that are financially sustainable as well as financially appropriate for the community. And then the final one is to provide library services that connect residents with educational opportunities, as well as the digital library and then the power of reading. And so that's the Reader's Digest condensed version of the plan. I know you all have a copy of the full plan. Just to kind of looking at the timeline, we started in February of 24, and we're here in February of 25, having completed the plan kind of within the timeline that was in your RFP, as well as in what we had said that we would be able to accomplish. And so I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for that update on the PCR activity. Are there any questions or comments? Thank you for Councilman Bell.
Sure. I'm sorry, I didn't have time to review all the report here, but and maybe this is more to Roger. Have we identified, as far as the PCR, some projects that we want to see done in the near future, other than, you know, we've got playground maintenance and stuff that needs to be done, but to expand on programming?
Yeah, so as you look at the plan and look at those action steps, we provided kind of a timetable, a short-term, mid-term, and long-term. And that short-term is kind of the 0 to 3 year time frame. It's not on the slide, but it's in the document. And so some of those, short-term that we looked at were kind of your field renovations, looking at your playground renovations. I know you've already kind of begun looking at the playground at the elementary school for replacement and update there. And then we identified projects at eight of your other parks for upgrades and renovations within that. And then there were some kind of, you know, looking at the possibility of renovations at the pool. We offered a couple of solutions, one kind of shorter term, one long term, renovating versus building it.
Okay, thank you. I'll get a chance to review this a little deeper in depth. Thank you for that presentation.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Councilman Bell. Councilman Coleman.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. I guess I'm down here to the last page that you were presenting, and I'm finally getting to read these. So, you know, the goals ultimately where you come from. So the one thing that kind of struck me to begin with was the population growth and the projection, or the lack of, over the last few years. And so I was just kind of curious, is this going to jive with your final goals? Because, you know, if you're not expecting a big population growth, then why would you go out and build a bunch of more stuff?
But
I'm looking at your goals, and a lot of these is what I've always supported, is to maintain and preserve. And it looked like some of the, you know, the parks seem to be meeting the needs of the community, other than just, you know, the age of it. And there's some, you know, the end of life. And I, you know, one of the things was the pool, how much it's been used and well-liked, and, you know, looking at where we can go with that. So, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to really cut you off. It was just kind of a comment about making sure that, you know, things were meshing, you know, what you said at the beginning with what the community think would want in futures, right?
Sure. So, and I can go back to that slide if you want, but the population decreases. If you look at those, that 5%, if you there's also the number of individuals, and they're less than 10 in each one of those age groups. So most of them were like the two that were increasing were 5 in each one of those age groups. Those two that were decreasing were, I think, 4 and 5 in those age groups. So it's not, there is some decline, but it's not like you're losing 30 in an age group. You're kind of losing some and gaining some. And so your population, your participants are going to kind of remain in that same area. And so you're currently, there's a greater demand for programs and services now than you have space to provide those or to increase those. One of the things that that I found, not unique to Unalaska, but your swim lessons basically sell out within hours. That they're so popular and there's so much demand for your swim lessons. Most communities that's the same, it's the same, just because there aren't a lot of indoor pools to provide those opportunities.
Thank you.
I think the other that kind of just quickly came to mind, if you don't mind, is that I talked about the baseball, and that baseball has been, come back for the younger age groups, but because there aren't additional playing fields for the older, they can't increase baseball for those 9th through 12th graders.
Any further questions? Well, thank you for the update on your PCR plan. Doing a great job, and I think it's important to understand this is what we do out here. We need to have activities for our younger kids, and also, of course, the older guys.
Yeah, exactly.
But they're all important, and I'm kind of looking for numbers, and if I dig deeper into your proposed development plan, I might have some questions later.
Yes, and I can't just jump over here because I'm in Virginia, but I'm happy to join you for a work session or something via Zoom or Teams. If you do have questions later, or you can feed them through Roger, and I can I can answer those questions as well. I'm happy to kind of stay. One of the things that we as Barry Dunn kind of pride ourselves in is that we look at you as clients for life. And so just because this is my last visit doesn't mean I'm gone. I'm available to you if you have questions, if there's clarification you need on the plan. I'm happy to get back on a call with you and help you understand that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So I will take a 5-minute break here and then come back to the next item in our work session.
You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Right now we're live streaming on Alaska City Council's general regular meeting at City Hall. Sounds like they're going to be taking a 5-minute break. So we will play some World Cafe for 5 minutes.
You can't go over. Mm-hmm. Like if you say 8:15 because 8:14, you're out.
Play basketball. It's a far almost favorite function.
I'm going.
You're down to one crutch.
Yeah, I'm living long.
I think you get that one, you know, and side by side, real went over. I got to take my down here and move out the internet as well. Super ride doing the same as that.
Well, it's not a winner, but yeah.
Boy, I came up here and met and I talked to Bill for a little bit. Sorry, he drove it up here and parked it up. Well, people used to it. Well,
okay, so
I opened this because it's kind of running here. But we could also turn off those cameras.
I'm fine.
I'm the favorite one in the whole world.
I am. We're going to wear it all the time. Kind of like my security. But I do. I get a little thing. We can also turn off those can lights, but I don't know how much you guys like that light.
Yeah, it's too bright.
I see it, right?
Yeah.
Those can lights provide a lot.
The lights are clean.
They should change them from halogen to LED or something.
There you go.
Oh,
well, that's better.
That's much better.
So.
Okay, so next meeting we're going to have that. Unless, of course, it gets colder by then.
There's one right up there.
One minute.
cellar. Their electric bill was turn those on.
Well, I forgot to turn my oven on. They've been gone for 8 hours. So where is that electric bill? Where's Eric? My wife's gonna be like, yes. My wife's gonna be like, quiet. That's first thing for Thanksgiving. I just warmed up 2 slices of pizza at lunch. I come back after
still on.
Whatever it was, and I'm standing there and I hear, oh, it's that oven sound.
The apartment there.
Yeah, it's always too hot.
Oh, Council, I texted everyone who's available for the scholarship committee meeting.
I already volunteered
for the last 2 years.
Sherry's repping the basketball game this week.
Okay.
That's why she's been foot fixed.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good scholarship. I don't know. It's pretty.
Okay.
I think. Hang on. Now wait. When is it? May?
April. April.
Early. April, like.
It's when they scheduled it. Yes, April 4 at 2:45. That is Friday.
You're all holding your phones up in there. Mm-hmm. It's like.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think there was a nurse for that. Did you guys see that? About 5.6 earthquake or something. Six, 39 miles east of Oma. 10 minutes ago.
Next island over. It's like west of the same island.
Back to order. 7:58. Next item on the agenda is a discussion of budget goals and revenue projections. Turn us over to city manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Folks, tonight is the FY26 revenue projections for the general fund for fiscal year 26. Historically, approximately 80% of the city's revenues are derived from taxes, being property sales and seeking. For the sake of this discussion, the accounts include real property tax, personal property tax, sales tax, the raw seafood tax, Alaska fisheries business tax, and the Alaska resource landing tax. And new, but not really new to the process, is Jim Sharp, who will be happy to come up and talk you through what our projections are.
So, I will start off by saying that I know this is going to be disappointing to everybody. I don't have any photos. I don't have any videos. I have line graphs and one pie chart.
To be fair, that's what I told them to put in there.
I think next time I'll probably bring a couple of baby goat videos. That might make it a little bit more entertaining. So you have before you, there's two items that are for me to discuss. One is the council goals. You will notice that the information in the council goal memo mirrors pretty closely to what you've seen in prior years. The one variance is specifically related to operating expenses. Years past, we've had goals anywhere ranging from 3 to 5, sometimes less. I know one of the years I was here, we were really trying to cut costs as much as we could. this year, the wording is such that we're trying to evaluate where we're at because of those limitations on expenses in prior years. We've ended up in a situation where there are certain deferred costs that are coming home to roost. And so we're looking for an opportunity to evaluate those. The expectation is those items will not all be included in the fiscal year 26 budget. Most likely they'll be spread over a couple of years. I don't really have much more to add because a lot of the information, as I said, you've seen in prior years, but I am certainly willing to field any questions, and the city manager's here as well if you have any questions related to that. So I'm just going to stop there for a moment, see if there's any questions, any comments, and then we'll move on to the revenue side.
Any questions, comments? Councilor Pullman?
Yeah, I mean, I did notice that in that section about the expenditures, operating budget, not adhering to the 3-5%. And I guess that was going to be my question. Fundamentally, what was the basis for that kind of objective as opposed to what, you know, this is what we spent before and we want to hold back. Can you give me an example? I mean, I'm trying to follow but like you're saying some of these, yeah, you're saying you're reevaluating or you're looking at it.
So I'm just the numbers guy.
Yeah.
So I'm going to defer to either the city manager. I know some of this had to do with repairs and maintenance, so I don't need to put Mr. Scott Brown on the spot, but I know that he was involved in this process as well.
And I'm sure we'll see it when we get to the budget area, these inflated as like compared to last year. This is, so I'm sure there'll be an explanation at that point, but just kind of curious.
I think some of it is equipment, depends on, you know, what was happening in police, what's happening in fire, when were there, the equipment is rated for so long for it to be usable. And I know I've talked with Chief Ben Knowles. One of the things that we're concerned about is expiration dates on some of that equipment there, for example, that needs replaced. The roofing, as you know, those are capital projects, though, but those have been put off for quite a long time. And we're doing the roofing study to find out just how bad. We have 47 roofs we're involved in that we own technically, with everything from pump houses to the school. Some of those are looking at $2-3 million, and some may only be $500,000. So I'm saying basically we have $1 million a roof, just as an educated guess. So I think there's just things like that that I really want to get the feel from the staff, what is hanging out in the balance, rather than not bringing it forward to try and meet a 3-5% goal. And then we are going to have discussions basically tomorrow, Thursday and Friday, talking with directors and Michelle scheduling those to kind of go over the budgets and get a good idea of what they've got in them. So, but you're correct. We'll bring all that forward to you.
So, yes, and I understand in line items, there may be these items that just have been deferred and they need to be addressed. But really what it comes down to me is overall budget within a department. And sometimes if you have those big items, you have to find a cut somewhere else, because ultimately what it comes down to is expenses equal to revenues. So just as we cut in the future, so you hear it again for me, but you know, sometimes you have to, if you have a light item that's really big, might have to find another place to make a cut. So that's it. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, can I make a comment?
Yes.
In preparation for the meetings that the city manager and I are going to have with the directors, I did compile some of that information today. And what I will say is, from what I could see just on the periphery, the directors have done a really good job in trying to limit that impact. I did see a couple of budgets that were, you know, around 10%, but I saw others that were at zero. But I think there is a wide range, and not every department is going to feel the impact of that, but there will certainly be some that will grow more than the 5% gap that we've had in prior years.
Any questions? We'll move on. Okay.
Revenue. You have before you a memo. You've got a nice slide presentation that I included in the packet.
I do want to touch on a couple of items. As Bill mentioned, the predominant amount of the revenue from the general fund is related to the taxes, whether it's sales tax, property tax, or some fish tax. And with respect to the non-fish taxes, I'm holding those primarily, I'm estimating those will be primarily the same as what they've been in prior years. And as in prior years, I also worked with Frank Kelty to develop the fish tax related taxes. And he's got quite a number of contacts and attends a lot of meetings. He's got a wealth of knowledge with respect to our fishery, local fisheries, and the impact on our economy. And you can see from the information that he is forecasting an increase in taxes, fish tax related. In total, from a tax perspective, the non-fish tax, we're holding those relatively even. There might be actually a slight decrease in those. But with respect to the fish taxes, those we are forecasting a fairly healthy increase. And I believe Frank is on the line. But what I want to say is those increases are due primarily to an increase in the pollock fishery in terms of the quota, as well as some higher priced items. The specific ones that Frank and I have talked about are the cod and the red king crab. I think red king crab right now is the short prices are around $20 a pound. The cod, I think, was around 40 cents, excuse me. I'm not a fisherman, so I trust Frank when he says those are fairly high prices. The $20 a pound for the king crab, yeah, that's a lot. And I fully can appreciate that. So with that, I don't really, in terms of the slide deck, I can certainly go over some of those specific items. I really presented that as part of the packet for you to look at prior to meeting today, so you can see some of those historical trends with respect to the taxes. In total, our projected general fund revenue is greater than what it has been in years past. And that truly is based on the increase in the fish taxes, from what I can tell. So with that, I will open it up if there are any questions that council may have, any comments. And then I do want to touch on investments a bit as I wrap it up, but I want to go through this piece first.
Thanks, Jim. Any questions or fish tax?
So I just want to make a comment. Basically, I appreciate having the revenues so early in the budget process. That's one thing I've been asking for a while. So I really do appreciate that. It makes it easier when you're when you're talking about the CMIP and all the different expenses, even though it doesn't all come together. It just makes it easier when you kind of have an estimate of what you're going to bring in. So appreciate that. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Ruby. Anyone else? Council? All right.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The last comment I wanted to touch on is investment income. I know in the past that's been a topic of discussion, and we do include it in our revenue budget. And specifically, for me, there are two components to investment income. There is the amount of money that we receive on a monthly basis from our investments, and that's in the form of interest income or dividends, that sort of thing. There's another component that's called unrealized gain or loss, and that's really derived from a monthly or annual change in our portfolio value. To me, that's not cash. Interest income is cash. And what you see in the budget for investment income is the cash piece. And you'll notice on page 2 of the revenue memo, the budget for fiscal year 25 for investment income is $3 million. I checked before tonight's meeting, and I only looked at the interest income account in our accounting system, and we're already at $4.7 million. That's through the end of January, so 7 months in. And I have no reason to believe that that's not going to continue through at least the end of this fiscal year and into future years. because that is truly more of a revenue stream as opposed to anything that's necessarily related to what administration is running the White House. And while the money that is that comes from the investment income is not necessarily in our checking account, we do have access to it. We can pull it if we need to without jeopardizing any of our portfolio in the process. So the final comment I wanted to make with respect to the revenue projections is it is February. It is early in the process. We will continue to evaluate where we're at. You could very well see a number when the budget comes out that's less than this or something that maybe is a little bit more. But I do want you to know that this is where we're sitting today. It may and probably will change at least a little bit based on information as it comes in. And again, with that, I'll open up if folks have any questions regarding my quick spiel on investment income or just on the revenue side in general.
Do you have any questions for none at this time?
Thank you very much.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
Yes, we will.
Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on. Does anyone wish to speak to the discussion on budget goals and revenue projections in the chamber? Hearing none, is there anyone on the phone, Zoom?
No, sir. No one indicated they wanted to speak.
Okay, thank you. Is there any need a motion and a second to return to regular session?
I make a motion to return to regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Longo, second by Councilman Luby to return to regular session. Is there any objections? Hearing none. We are back in regular session at 8:14 p.m. We're now in regular agenda. Persons wish to speak on the regular agenda item must sign up for the city clerk. We have 3 minutes at this time. Anyone signed up for item A, ordinance 2025-02. Second reading, authorizing the issuance of an electric utility revenue refunding bond for the city to refund all or a portion of the outstanding electric utility revenue refunding bond 2015A of the city, authorizing execution of certain documents in accordance therewith. We have a motion and a second to adopt ordinance 2025-02.
Move to adopt ordinance 2025-02.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Tungo. I'll turn this over to the city manager for further information.
Thank you, Mayor. This matter was introduced by our interim finance director, Jim Sharp. It's due to a reduction that has occurred in interest rates, which provides an opportunity for the city to save money by participating in the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank's next bond issue. Participation will allow the city to realize savings of about $645,000 over the life of our debt. Recommend approval.
Finished.
Yes, sir.
Questions from the council? Comments? Questions? Concerns? Thank you. City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir. No one signed up.
Hearing no request for public comment on this issue, I request a roll call vote on this.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Tongo?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
On the roll call vote of 5 yes and 0 nays, the ordinance 2025-02 moved to a second. It's adopted. On second reading.
No,
it's adopted.
It's adopted. Okay, my notes missed it. Okay. Next item, resolution 2025-14, approving the council's goal for the fiscal year 2026 budget. I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution 2025-14.
I'll make a motion to adopt resolution 2025-14.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Longo. I'll turn this over to city manager.
Thank you. So this is something we go through and you all review and adopt as budget goals. So we've done our budgeting season. There's about 10 goals. They usually don't change from year to year. Try, obviously, to budget for a balanced budget. Covers our proprietary funds, our general funds, and others. If you have any questions about these specific goals, I'm happy to try and answer those for you.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Council members have any questions or comments on 2025-14? Okay, hearing no discussion this time. Council, city clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, no one signed up.
Okay, I'll request a roll call vote at this time for resolution 2025-14.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Tongo?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of 5 yes and 0 nays, the result of this vote, the council has adopted resolution 2025-14. Next item C, resolution 2025-15, supporting the development of a renewable energy resources. May I have a motion second to adopt resolution 2025-15?
Make a motion to adopt resolution 2025-15.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Longo, second by Councilman Coleman. This time I'll turn this over to city manager.
Thank you. So this resolution is coming about as a result of what you see in previous council action, years of support for a lot of the work that we've all done, past and present staffs, to pursue renewable energy opportunities that we may have here on the island or in port. And this resolution to continue pursuing renewables is in itself valuable because it's something we can attach to some of the grant work that we do else, you know, and other initiatives. So we try to distill it down into one short, concise resolution that summarizes this community's feelings and goals towards pursuing renewable energy. And I support the resolution.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments on resolution 2025-15? Councilman Coleman?
That's just a comment. Gotten pretty chilly in Washington regarding renewable and green energy, but I don't think that takes away from the intent here and the effort to pursue, you know, don't know if there's going to be many choices out there. But again, like I said, I just do support this resolution and its intent.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Councilman Coleman. Any further comments or discussion? Okay, hearing none, though. City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, no one signed up.
Thank you. a request for roll call vote at this time on resolution 2025-15.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Tumble?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of 5 yeses, and with this vote, the council has adopted resolution 2025-15. Next item is the ordinance 2025-03, creating a budget amendment number 2 to the fiscal year 2025 budget, appropriating $187,008 from the general fund for an increase of $21,000 to the council operating budget, $25,000 for the city manager's operating budget, $100,000 for the finance operating budget, $138,768 for the high school boiler replacement project, reducing the information system for the public safety budget by a combined of $97,760, accepting the Department of Homeland Security SHSP grant for the $103,350 to fund then create the DPS and City Hall security improvement project, transferring $250,000 from the city manager's operating budget to the planning budget operating budget for a comprehensive study, and increasing the electric fund operating budget for a transfer of capital projects for the powerhouse SCADA and reporting upgrading projects. And I have a motion and second to introduce ordinance 2025-03 and schedule it for a public hearing and second reading on March 11th, 2025.
I move to introduce ordinance 2025-03 and schedule it for second reading and public hearing on March 11th, 2025.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, second by Councilman Tango. I'll turn this over to City Manager. City Manager Dennis Bramley.
We have done our best to give credit to interim finance director Jim Sharp, trying to color code some of these things to group them together. And I suppose if you have a black and white copy, it didn't help. But that's what I have before me. You know, we're trying to limit the number of budget amendments we bring. We're trying to do a good job budgeting. This is the second budget amendment. I know there will be one more in the future, probably the result of negotiation with some labor groups. But I would defer to answer questions individually rather than read through all of these. If you have any specific questions about a budget item, I'm happy to answer.
Thank you, Bill. Are there any questions on these 4, 5 transfers of funds? Councilman Luby?
Yeah, I'm just curious. You know, we always do budget amendments to increase the budget. Do we ever look for sources or spots that we can reduce to offset that increase? Like I'm just looking at the financials say for mayor and council. We're only at 24% of our budget. Are we going to use all of our budget? And could it just be, I'm just asking.
No, it's a good question. So. With trying to limit these, the experience with budget amendments in my mind is we don't want to have 13 of them like we've often had before. I think that's a little helter-skelter. But when something new is introduced, I tend to want to bring it and discuss it with you. For example, the key to the city, which is going to come out of the council's budget, and I was really hoping to have that already presented to you all. But since we're doing a budget amendment now, I want to be transparent. However, I did have a conversation with Councilwoman Coleman just the other day, who asked if there's plenty of money in there. So I'm trying to not just Well, we'll just pay for it out of that, because I don't always know what your plans are for your funds. But certainly, you know, some of that, you could probably mix that and another one just because you do have the funds. So what you have here is my attempt to be as transparent as possible to not fail your budgets. So.
Okay, yeah, and sometimes if it's just line item things, you know, and even looking at planning, you don't have an associate planner, so you have, you know, one FTE that you're not going to be spending most likely through the end of this year. So that's something that, you know, I don't know, just things to look at in the future as well. And I understand what you're saying too, because then if you fall short, you got to come back for another budget amendment. So.
Well, I appreciate your comments, and just realize that's one of the reasons in our balance sheets and budgeting, we tell you what the budgeted amount was and what was actually used in the prior years. So you don't see a huge budget if we only use 60% of that. That's there to help guide in those budget talks. So I always figure there's a safety catch there.
Yeah.
Because adding 10,000 that you didn't use is going to show a revised budget, but then it really didn't use it. And that's, I'm sure it will get more refined as we go, but right now I just want to be sure that I am as transparent with all of you as possible.
Yeah, I always have those kind of questions. Sorry. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Councilman Woodby, Councilman Coleman.
Okay, so just one aspect of here that I'm just a little confused on. Well, I'm confused on more than that, but I'm just going to talk about one. So this is the the Holman grant, $103,000 for the security, but then it says that they're going to reduce IS and public safety. So I guess, does that mean that we had it budgeted for and then now we have the money and we're going to move that over, or is that, or are those two separate things? Because I'm still trying to understand that aspect. Reducing the budgets by a combined amount of $97,000. So the IS, thank you, and public safety.
Mr. Sharp, do you have an answer for that?
I'll try.
Okay.
The answer is yes. The public safety and IS budgets included monies for this specific project. We've since received the grant so we can reduce the budget. I'm sure Ms. Libby will be very thrilled by that. So it is really just a swap.
Okay.
It's not a dollar for dollar swap, because the grant ended up being a little bit more than what we had budgeted. But yes, it is a trade.
Thank you. And I do like the colors.
It's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions or comments on the ordinance 2025-03? None? Okay. City clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, no one signed up.
Okay, thank you. At this time, I'll request a roll call vote.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Excuse me. Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Goldman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Levy?
Yes.
Thank you. And with this vote of 5 yeses, the council has introduced ordinance 2025-03. The next item is our council directives to the city manager. I had a request from the school for two or three members of the council to, or at least one, to attend the scholarship committee for the school. And we need a volunteer. Councilman Coleman.
I've already volunteered, so yeah. Yes, sir.
Anyone else interested? scholarship committee for a school. I think it's on April 3rd.
April 4th. Yes, that's a Friday. And they scheduled it for 2:45 p.m.
45 in the afternoon.
Yes.
Anything else? Okay. So that's then. Asking thanks to Councilman Coleman for attending the scholarship committee for Alaska City Public School. Okay, thank you. See any other directives, comments for the city manager? Community input and announcements at this final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. We have 3 minutes and use the microphone. Here's your name. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor Council, Ben Knowles, Fire Chief. For the record, I just wanted to take a quick second to introduce and welcome Carl Johansson with Ada Architects. He's only here for a couple of days, just kind of getting the lay of the land. Ada was awarded the contract for the feasibility study for the fire station and training facility. We're excited to get working on that over the next 6 months. Right now, the timelines will produce a report, midway report to you about April-ish, May-ish. We look forward to all kinds of community input and stakeholder engagement through the process.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Ben. Anyone else? Okay. City clerk, were there any comments written or submitted?
No, sir, there were no submitted comments.
Okay, thank you. Having completed all items on the agenda, we are now adjourned at 8:33 p.m. Thank you and good night. See you in the last one.